Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Anna Sale in for Brian Laird today. We're starting the show with a check-in on city politics. This week we had two new mayoral polls and two different frontrunners. Christine Quinn consoled after an intern fainted and then waited and waited for an ambulance in front of a crowd of reporters. The city reacted to the Trayvon Martin verdict as the council and the mayor continued to be at odds over stop and frisk and a racial profiling bill in the city. And then there was this.
Why do you want this job? Because before you had your fall from grace, or whatever her name was, before you had your fall from grace, you were the governor of the state.
Right.
You were the governor. Aren't you at one and the same time both above and below this job?
That's why I'm trying to get right in the middle. There are a little Goldilocks here.
So that's Stephen Colbert talking to city comptroller candidate Elliot Spitzer last night, just one of Spitzer's many national media hits this week. To talk about this, I'm joined by Kate Taylor, City Hall reporter for The New York Times, and Ozzie Pabra of Capital New York. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having us.
Sure.
Thanks.
Now, first, a public service announcement to all you voters out there. The primary election is September 10th. The deadline to register to vote is August 16th, so if you have not done that, get to it. Now, Kate, you have a piece in the paper this morning about what voters are talking about. The first line is Anthony Weiner the one with the prostitute scandal? It's hard to keep track. Spitzer and Weiner.
Or the other one.
Yes, it's hard to keep track. So here's my question for you. When you talk to voters, is it this sense that, you know, Anthony Weiner is really connecting? He's shown up as a front runner in two polls this week, not in some polls this week. Do you get the sense that he's connecting, or is this still a novelty?
I think it's both. I've talked to some people. I've talked to a couple of black pastors recently who talked about Anthony Weiner coming to their churches and saying that he really connected, that people were really moved by his story, impressed by what he had to say. At the same time, he's obviously benefiting from a huge amount of name recognition, even if to some extent people are getting him and Spitzer mixed up as to whose scandal is whose. But, you know, I think New Yorkers, to a certain extent, like their politicians, like their leaders, larger than life. And partly because of his scandal, he is that. And I think that that's benefiting him.
So, Ozzie, we saw a few new polls this week, one from Quinnipiac, one from Siena. Anthony Weiner narrowly led in the Quinnipiac poll. It was actually within the margin of error with Christine Quinn. Then Christine Quinn had a 9-point lead over Weiner in the Siena poll that came out just a few days later. So first question is, what are we learning from these polls, and should we be paying that close of attention to them if they have that wide of a variation in just a few days?
Well, as pollsters like to say, polls are just a snapshot at one particular moment. But what we should be paying attention to one fact, which is that the people who are responding to these surveys know who some of the candidates are and have no clue who the other candidates are. So there's a gap between at least who is on the radar of most people that are taking these polls, and there seems to be a lack of recognition about anyone else that's running. So in that regard, these polls have to be looked at as measuring something. The other part that's like a little bit uncertain is that places like the New York Times editorial board, which many of the Democratic candidates are covering their endorsement, and other people like the Reverend Al Sharpton have yet to make endorsements, and the candidates haven't started really advertising or spending money to get their name out there, with the exception of Christine Quinn with a recent television ad. So once some institutional players make endorsements, and once the candidates start spending money to get their names out there, that's when you'll start to see some of these poll numbers really moving. But until then, this is a lot of this is name recognition.
So Kate, that's a question I have about where we are in the race right now in terms of strategy. The gathering of petition signatures is done. Fundraising is done for some of the top candidates. Christine Quinn, Bill de Blasio, and Anthony Weiner have raised what they can spend in a primary. What do you do for the next 6 weeks before the start of September when people start really tuning in to the mayoral election? What are the campaigns trying to do until the end of August?
That's a really good question. I think, you know, obviously for the candidates who aren't Quinn or Wiener, their real challenge at this point is name recognition. I mean, I was talking to these young women yesterday, as you were referring to, at this fair up in the Bronx, and when I mentioned Bill Thompson's name, they had vaguely heard of him. When I asked if there was, you know, an African-American candidate in the race, they sort of thought so. So, you know, candidates like Thompson and de Blasio really are not well-known throughout the city. You know, de Blasio has the one advantage that his son has this great hair, so a few people have noticed that. So, you know, I think that these people, these guys are going to be trying to show up everywhere that they can, continue to do things to get in the papers, even if, as we saw with Bill de Blasio the other week, they have to get arrested to do that, and just try to keep getting their names out there.
Ozzie, what has happened with Bill Thompson's campaign? I mean, at the end of June in a Quinnipiac survey, it was looking like a three-way contest between Christine Quinn, Anthony Weiner, and Bill Thompson. That was just after he'd gotten the backing of the teachers union. And then in both polls this week, he's fallen back clearly to the second-tier level alongside Bill de Blasio, behind Quinn and Weiner. What happened there?
Well, one of the advantages that Christine Quinn has is that she's currently an office holder, and she often makes announcements alongside either Mayor Michael Bloomberg or members of his administration. So at any given point, she has the opportunity to command attention or at least be in the public spotlight, whereas Bill Thompson, unless he's doing a campaign event, you know, that garners attention, it's sort of not written about or seen, and therefore his level of visibility sort of fluctuates at any given point. And then when you have something like a Spitzer candidacy that sort of takes all the attention away from the mayor's race completely, people like Thompson and de Blasio, who are sort of teetering on the edge of increasing their visibility, just face that much more of a challenge getting known.
And Kate, you also wrote about Joe Loda this week. Let's talk about the Republican side for just a moment. We saw campaign finance filings at the beginning of this week. On the Republican side, John Catsimatidis is self-financing. Joe Loda has been trying to raise money. He's taking part in the city's campaign financing system. How's Joe Loda looking in his ability to compete with John Catsimatidis' money?
It's definitely going to be tough. Obviously, he has the advantage of being able to say that he's been a deputy mayor. He has all this management experience, and that's very powerful to some people. I was following him out campaigning in Brooklyn, in heavily Jewish neighborhoods of Brooklyn, and he's making a really strong effort there. He's hired a guy who was the Jewish liaison for Mike Bloomberg and George Pataki. So he's doing some smart campaigning, but obviously John Catsimatidis has a lot more money to spend, and he is spending it on advertisements and, you know, every way he can. So it's looking like it could be tight.
And Kate, another question I have from the New York Times poll that came out this week about voters' attitudes. One of the things they said, you mentioned the larger-than-life thing about New Yorkers expect their mayor to be larger-than-life. When voters were asked about if any of these candidates in the field fit that bill, there wasn't any great consensus about who was a larger-than-life candidate. But there was a great consensus about saying, I want a mayor who understands the needs of and problems of someone like me, which the New York Times translated as empathy. So how do you sort of, how do you square these two things? Because to me, larger than life means big character, principled, stands out and is firm. And empathetic means listening, means perhaps more flexible than a larger than life candidate would be.
That's such a good point, and it, you know, it really speaks a lot to New Yorkers' ambivalence about Mike Bloomberg, because obviously he has been larger than life in so many ways, from his money, which is the most dramatic way, to also his ideas. He takes these really firm positions, whether it's on smoking or on soda that was less popular, and at the same time, he does not come across as empathetic. Nobody really believes that Mike Bloomberg, you know, understands your middle-class problems because he lives a completely different life. And, you know, New Yorkers are really mixed when you talk to them about what the experience of the last 12 years has been like. And I think that that's, you know, that ambivalence is what we're seeing play out in the mayoral race, where Christine Quinn despite being a woman and possibly seen as more empathetic, is certainly seen as the candidate of continuity, of continuing, you know, the trends and sort of policies of the last 12 years. Anthony Weiner is seen as an outsider who isn't even in office now, who had to resign office, who doesn't have the support of any of the political establishment. And I think it's really unclear, and you see that in the poll, what New Yorkers want.
It is unclear because they say, majority say they feel like the city's moving in the right direction, and then 65% they want a new direction after 12 years of Bloomberg. So what's a candidate to do in terms of talking about their vision?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think it's almost like they don't actually want the things in the city to be any different. They don't want policies to be any different, but they want a different person. And maybe that's where the empathy comes across. They like Bloomberg's policies, but they're not sure how they feel about him as a person. And so they sort of want a different face, a different voice. And, you know, in some ways, that's what Christine Quinn represents, since she is completely different. She's a woman. She's middle class. She's not someone who's extremely wealthy. And so I think that's trying kind of what she's hoping to communicate is that, you know, I have basically the same policies, but look, I'm like you. I'm a regular person. I'm empathetic. So, you know, it'll sort of depend on how successful she is in conveying that and how that resonates.
So, listeners, we're talking about the fluidity in recent polls in the mayor's race. If you have changed your mind about which candidate you think you might support in the mayoral election, give us a call. The phone number is 212-433-9692. We'll have time for about one or two calls, 212-433-WNYC. Ozzy, let's also talk about the comptroller race and what we saw between Scott Stringer, the Manhattan Borough President, and Eliot Spitzer this week. Last week was all Eliot Spitzer news. Was he going to get the petition signatures? This week, Eliot Spitzer has revealed his first phase of his campaign strategy, which has been to do a lot of media appearances and not so many actual campaign stops with New Yorkers. What do you think he's been doing?
Well, it seems like there's two schools of thought that he's doing. One is to simply flood the zone, get his face in front of as many people as possible, and national media outlets is one way to do that. And if he saturates the marketplace in that way, people in some regard just sort of get used to seeing him again, and therefore his scandal and his issues start becoming, you know, something that in a way fades into the background. I mean, he had a pretty contentious interview with Jake Tapper at CNN, but even at the end of it, you know, Tapper said, like, thanks for coming on and answering all these questions. You know, he goes on the Colbert Report, especially with that clip that you played, and you know, there was a very real question there, is how can somebody want to be comptroller when they show such a lack of self-control? But the setting, it came off as a punchline and a joke. And, you know, as the mayor has demonstrated any number of times when he performs at the Inner Circle show, if you're able to make fun of yourself, you know, there's an endearing quality to it. So you have this, like, you know, this air campaign that Spitzer is doing because he doesn't really have a campaign staff and he's still putting that together. And then you have Scott Stringer, you know, running around the city on a much more local level trying to get attention and draw people's attention to some of Spitzer's other shortcomings, like his, you know, lack of disclosure with financial disclosure reports.
Let's talk about what Scott Stringer's been up to, because he talked about mm-hmm. financial disclosure reports. He hammered him on right. Stringer hammered Spitzer on campaign finance at the start of the week. It seems to me that in some ways he's trying to make this argument that Spitzer says one thing and does another, which plays right into that prostitution scandal.
Exactly. There's an amazingly challenging problem that opponents of Spitzer and opponents of Weiner seem to be facing, which is there is this giant elephant in the room, this very obvious flaw. But getting that elephant out of the room and in front of voters seems to be almost as big a problem. When Sal Albanese, the former city councilman who actually served with Anthony Weiner, raised Weiner's lying about the sexting scandal, he got booed down. And that was at a mayoral forum in front of seniors, you know, not known to be a rowdy crowd. But there's this idea that if you attack somebody for something personal, voters seem to not be as receptive to it as one would think. So what Stringer has done is say, I'm not going to talk about his, you know, my opponent's personal failings, but his policy failings, you know. And in talking about those policy failings, he's subtly suggesting that there's this double standard, that he's a rich guy, that he's above the law. And that all brings to mind, almost like a dog whistle, it brings to mind the scandal. So he's finding ways to remind people that there are problems with Elliott Spitzer, and there are ways to sort of keep that conversation around that very obvious problem he has.
We've got a caller, John, in Manhattan. You've recently changed your mind about which candidate you're leaning towards?
Yes, good morning, folks. I was originally not going to vote for Christine Quinn, but Anthony Weiner has changed that. I'm now going to vote for Christine Quinn because of Anthony Weiner. I think Anthony Weiner is a big mouth know-it-all, and he just wants to be mayor because he wants to be mayor. And there's no comparison to him and Elliott Spitzer. Elliott Spitzer everybody knows is brilliant and is looking for a job that was not as important as the one he had. Weiner wants a job that would be much more bigger and more responsible than what he had. I'm now going to volunteer for the Christine Quinn campaign.
So you're not only changing your who you're leaning towards, you're going to volunteer for her campaign. I mean, that's quite a move. Who were you always? You said you weren't going to vote for Christine Quinn before. Who were you leaning towards before?
Well, I wasn't sure who, but I just didn't care for Christine Quinn, so I wasn't familiar. I would have voted for a Democrat, but I wasn't familiar with them. Maybe Thompson or Bill de Blasio. But I think Christine Quinn is the best chance.
So now Christine Quinn, she's your anti-Anthony Weiner vote now.
She's my anti-Weiner vote. I think she'll be good for the city.
All right, John. Thanks so much for your call. Now, Kate, I want to ask you about retail politicking in this hot summer heat and how much it actually matters. I mean, the Democratic primary electorate is very small in New York City. So
yeah.
When you go out and you're just talking to New Yorkers, is it gaining votes for these candidates?
It's really hard to say. I mean, in some ways you wonder if it's for us, the press, so that we know that these candidates are working hard. You know, Stringer's schedule is just full of events, and even before he had a competitor, his schedule was full of events to show that he was working for this office, even though it was sort of expected to be a cakewalk. So, you know, we reporters go to the events and cover them, so that obviously reaches more people if they're on television, if they're on New York One, if they're written about in the papers. And, you know, but in this heat, it's really a challenge. It's no fun. You know, Joe Loda out in Brooklyn referred to it being a three-shirt day. And I was
That's
out,
gross.
You know, Bill de Blasio's wife was out at this park in the Bronx yesterday. And, you know, she looked very elegant and summery, but the, you know, sweat marks were growing on her dress. And, you know, you can kind of understand why Elliott Spitzer might prefer to spend his time in air-conditioned television studios rather than actually going out and doing campaign events.
And, Ozzie, you made the point in your briefing column this morning that if retail politicking was really what it took to be in the lead, then John Liu would be much better in the polls than he's been doing.
Right. Kate brings up a great point, which is that when these candidates say, I'm meeting voters on this street corner, you know, a lot of times it's very cursory, it's very brief, and they spend more of their time talking to reporters, which I'm personally very, very appreciative of, but they're not actually talking to as many voters as a look at their schedule might suggest, which gets at this idea of how do you actually campaign in a city of 8 million people, you know, for a job that is very much grounded in the day-to-day operations that sort of touch people's lives. You know, the LaGuardia quote about, you know, there's no Republican or Democratic way to pick up the garbage. Well, you know, there are Democratic and Republican ways about telling people you're going to pick up the garbage. And it seems to be a great challenge. You know, there's also this, you know, summer flight that some New Yorkers take to either the Hamptons or the Catskills, and you have at least one of the candidates, Sal Albanese, going out to the Catskills with his wife to sort of greet voters around there. And you just have to wonder if that's more about getting attention for the act of doing it than actually the number of contacts they're making with voters.
All right. Well, we are running out of time. I want to note that we've gotten a caller who used to be a Quinn supporter, now supporting Anthony Weiner. We don't have time to go to that caller, but another switch just the other way than the previous caller we heard from. Kate Taylor, City Hall reporter for The New York Times, and Ozzie Pabra from Capital New York. Thanks so much for breaking down the week with us.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.
And coming up, we're going to look at whether better building design can make you healthier. I'm Anna Sale in for Brian Lehrer.